Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. Well, Brian, this is going to be kind of a weird question, but I think it's an okay lead-in to this next topic, which is the Stale DS mission and the Stale DS website. So I'm going to ask kind of a weird question.
Sure.
Almost going to seem narcissistic, but I think it's relevant. How did you and I, remind me how you and I came to be connected?
Okay. That crisis where everything fell apart a couple of years ago, I was looking around for anybody, you know, to talk to. I had purchased, I think I listened to your podcast, the Richard Bushman one on Rough Stone Rolling. Mm-hmm. And I think I sent you an email, and Richard Bushman copied back, and it was really very small. But, you know, you just said, hey, hang in there. If you want to talk, give me a call. Mm-hmm. And Richard Bushman had sent something to me, too, and I responded back. And so that was the first connection. It wasn't really anything significant. But, I started listening to a bunch of your podcasts. I got really involved in Faces East. Trying to think of what else. I think the big one after that was getting involved in the Open Mormon movement.
Right.
I don't know if you want to talk about that in the podcast at all. But,
no, we don't have to. But
yeah,
that's enough to say.
Yeah, and I was involved over at New Order Mormon, kind of posting things, and that sort of led to our collaboration. You started up the Stay LDS site, but you had a lot of projects going on, and that sounded something really like it was really inspiring to me to work on a concept like that. So I dove into that and started trying to find some other people to help out with it, and you know, start organizing just all the framework and mechanics behind the scenes of, you know, setting up the board and all that stuff.
Well, let's dive right in then. What's StaleDS.com about? Why were you interested in it? And, you know, give our listeners an overview of all that.
Let me start by why I'm interested in this. Because I do spend a significant amount of time on it. In addition to working and family and all that stuff, I so feel for the people that are angry and this is all falling apart for, because I know how that feels, and it is so hard to make, you know, a transition of getting out of that. It feels like such a rut. I just feel like this is something that I can do. I may not be able to fix the whole world. The world's a great big messed up place, but I can at least try to, you know, help some people in my immediate family, my friends, to just get out of that place where, you know, it hurts so much, because there really can be like a light at the end of the tunnel, which leads into the purpose of Stale DS, is not to get everybody to get crammed back into the box of the way they used to be. Because there really is, once you start this, there's no going backwards. I mean,
once the genie's out of the bottle, you can't ever put it back again.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say anything's impossible, but I really don't know of any or many people that just decided, oh yeah, what was I thinking? You know, I'm just going to forget all this stuff that I know now and you know, just jump right back into the box. Knowing that there's no way back, you got to find a way forward. I became a big fan of that, you know, the James Fowler Stages of Faith, and read the book. And like you said, me and you did a couple of podcasts about that over at Mormon Expression. Stay LDS, like I said, maybe sometimes it's good to go over what it's not. It's not an apologetic website, although it is positive about the church. So we're not trying to convince anybody there that they're wrong and that the church is really right. Does that make any sense?
Sure.
I mean, somehow, a lot of times it's confusing that anything that's positive is apologetic, and I suppose maybe it is in that vein, but it's not so much trying to validate the traditional beliefs and saying, yes, this is right no matter what.
Right.
Because we quite often, well, for one thing, nobody has the right answer on stay LDS. Because once you hit this thing, this brick wall that you crash into, it is a completely personal journey after that. There's no one true answer after that as to what you're going to do. And that's really, really important because that's the way it should be. You know, you're on your own and finding, you know, bringing that external authority back into yourself and building whatever, you know, faith it is that you're going to have going forward, whether that's atheism or you go to, you know, evangelical Christianity or Buddhism. But guess what? There is an option. You can stay Mormon.
And just as a, I don't know if this is a disclaimer, but it's a point that I think is really important. And it's something that I swear it's taking me, I don't know, it took me 40 years to learn. And that's that, like, there was always this part of me that looked on those who decided to leave the church as taking the inferior option, as right. as taking the weakest and you know, least noble, least enlightened of all options. And it wasn't until like 5-6 months ago where I had to say, no, leaving can be just as legitimate as staying, even though I want to stay and I want everyone else to stay. Do you feel like you're at the point where you also agree with that? Not that you should, but for me, that was an important step in actually being able to work with people again, completely letting go my desires for them and no longer judging those who feel like leaving was their path for health.
That is such a huge, important point and such an important perspective to gain. And that's, and I want to, if we can keep coming back to this theme of personal transformation, but that is a transformative experience where we finally let go of needing to control what other people are doing, you know, in order to validate what we're doing, you know, and like you said, you know what, leaving the church is a hard thing to do. That is not the easy choice.
Right.
And you know what I found really inspiring is I listened to your podcast with Sean McCraney.
Yeah.
And you know what? That guy had to leave the church in order to progress further as an individual. And I believe still wholeheartedly in this concept of eternal progression, even if I'm not a literal Orthodox believer in the LDS church. Right. But when I heard his story, I was so touched by that. And I thought, you know, there was a person who really needed to leave in order to become more whole. And that is totally fine.
Right. Okay.
Because you know what? Because that's the important thing, is to have that experience of transforming, not what membership card is in your wallet.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, is it okay to leave? It's totally, you know, if that's, it's, that's what people have to realize. This is up to them now.
Right.
You know, once you have hit this point and you are one of these people, and not every, and that's another important thing, I think, towards finding peace with this, is not everybody is wired to need to go through what we go through. But right. if you are,
you know it
and it's going to happen, and you got to do something with it, because if you stay in that spot where it's painful, it's just painful.
Yeah.
But you know what? Everybody's got, if you're one of these people that's wired that is going to do this, you're going to hit that and you're going to have to be angry, and that's okay.
Right.
You're going to have to, it's painful to wrench all this stuff out of you so that you have a clean slate to build something that's your own again. That's not something that got handed down to you or that was told to you that you feel like you had to do.
Right.
Whatever it is you're going to do from this point on is your own responsibility, and make it good, you know,
right.
Trade up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so Stay LDS is not about trying to convince people that everyone has to be in the church. It's we're not trying, and another important thing is we're not trying to form a new splinter group of Reform Mormonism.
Right.
We don't have the answer. So anybody that comes to our site, we don't have the new one true answer.
Right.
We're not there to tell the church what to do, because, you know, like church leadership, this isn't, you know, our site has nothing to do officially with the LDS Church. It's just a bunch of people who care about other people that are going through this. So yeah, we're not there to tell them what to do. We're not there to tell people. We don't have the answer.
Right.
But if you want to kick around ideas, there's a whole bunch of really safe people that enjoy kicking around ideas in a positive atmosphere, that nobody's going to freak out. Nobody's going to call you nasty names, you know, or say that you're going to hell, or, you know, for believing what you believe. It's just a lot of other people that are in, we're all in the same boat, you know. if we can help each other out, that's cool.
If I can just speak in your defense a little bit, not your defense, but it's not just a couple of cool guys kicking stuff around. It's not only people who have been through this issue. Mm-hmm. They're extremely unique, because I would say that a lot of people who go through this situation end up leaving or wanting to leave. So the number of people who go through this and want to stay are not legion. At least I found them to be rare. And not only are these people unique in that aspect, but they're unique in that they've now been spending years helping people minimize the collateral damage, the 1,400 ways that they can poke themselves in the eye as they're going through this process.
Yeah.
And you can poke yourself in the eye. You can, the stakes are high. You can lose your wife, your husband. You can lose your children. You can lose your job. You can, you know, become depressed. The stakes are so high that there are absolutely quantifiable, proven methods and approaches that you can take, whether you end up staying or leaving, to minimize the collateral damage that you do to yourself and to others. And these people there in the forum know a lot of those tips and tricks, and are able to offer them to you at a time when your emotions might lead you to do things that aren't healthy for you or those around you.
That's a really good point, because unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to see it, Mormonism's not just something you do for an hour on Sunday. It's a culture. It's everything in life. If you're, you know, an active member of the church, either for many years or your whole life, you know, that's your culture. And when you exit, or if you decide to exit or think about it, like you said, it's not just like, I'm just not going to, you know, that's just not, I'm going to do something else on Sunday for an hour. It's everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it permeates every aspect of life, how you form your view of life, your purpose of life, your reason for living, your reason for doing the things that you do. That's not an easy thing to untangle.
Right.
And you make a very good point. It's not a majority of people that decide to stay once they hit that crisis.
Right.
But I personally think, and obviously because, you know, I help run that site, I think a lot more people could stay if they could find ways of adapting. And at Stay LDS, we call those reconciliation strategies. It doesn't mean that you go back to believing the way you did before, but maybe there are new, different ways of using Mormonism in your spiritual journey that is tolerable, and ways that you can filter out, you know, it's the cafeteria approach. You can eat the dishes that you do like and not tear yourself up about passing by the broccoli or the Brussels sprouts.
Right. Well, let's dive into those in a second, but let's begin. Mm-hmm. Let's begin, if you don't mind, by just spending 3 minutes on the main reasons that you see as to why people leave. There's usually, I can name 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
Why would anyone consider leaving? Just for those who like have no clue for why someone would hit this crisis. What are the main buckets?
Let's see. a big one is it's not true. I know this is going to be a very controversial statement, and I'm sure to catch fire from both sides of the spectrum. But and once again, anything that I say is just my own personal beliefs.
Right.
And half of what I think about is nonsense half the time anyways. But the church is not true.
What? You are not allowed to say that on my program. No one is ever allowed to say that on my program. I've never said that.
Can I get away with it because I still find that it's true? And that's going to be, like what? I said, that's going to sound like a crazy paradox. But who was it? I'm sorry, I'm bad on these names. Either Leonard Arrington or Eugene England. The church is as true as the gospel.
Yeah, that's
one of those guys. England. Yeah, I would take that one step further and say that the gospel is as true as a ham sandwich. A ham sandwich will stop my hunger. It will nourish me. It will help my body rebuild itself. It does all these things. And like I said, these are just my personal views, and this is what works for me at the moment. But there are a lot of stories, and I may be approaching this more from like a Joseph Campbell mythology perspective. There's a lot of stories in the church that we all thought were literally true. And they could be. I don't want to eliminate this for anybody else, but I'm just saying what the way I see it. But you've got scriptures full of stories, the Old Testament. Many of those really aren't actually true. But they're such valuable stories that convey a truth that, you know, the Old Testament, for example, has been passed down for almost 3,000 years from one generation to another. It's been reused over and over. There's something in it valuable enough that it has survived the test of time for thousands and thousands of years as truth.
Right.
Even though Jonah probably didn't get swallowed by a whale and spit out on the shore, and maybe Moses didn't really exist, and, you know, all the stuff that even people of the Jewish faith that are less literal will admit. So to use a great Mormon example is the Liahona that Lehi and his family were wandering around in the wilderness with. Is the Liahona true? I mean, I don't know. It's pointing at the place, at the promised land. The promised land is a true spiritual concept, but the Liahona is just a ham sandwich. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm getting at, is saying, and this is, like I said, this is a reconciliation strategy for me. The church doesn't have to be, the stories in the church don't have to be true, as long as they convey the transcendent truth that helps me progress in this kind of hero's journey of life, of spiritual transformation. So there you go. There's the theology of Brian the Madman.
So why does that lead people to want to leave the church?
Because the church isn't true.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, so
you're saying that they were operating under a false, they were kind of set up under a false premise, yeah, to look at the church as a binary thing,
yeah,
which almost sets the church up to fail, because it's on or off, all or nothing, and you're saying that's the wrong scale upon which to measure. It's the wrong criteria and the wrong scale to be measuring things by.
Yeah, here's a good example: the Book of Mormon. There's so much controversy about the Book of Mormon. Where did it come from? I don't know. I love studying it. You know, that historical aspect. You know, but, you know, growing up, there was Joseph Smith, and God appeared to him, and the angel Moroni gave him gold plates, and he translated this miraculous language, and all this. You know, we've got that story, and it's a great story. It's full of meaning and richness. But then we find out, you know, from journals that, well, no, he wasn't actually looking through like these magic glasses. It was a peepstone in a hat, and that's freaking weird.
Right.
You know, and but
only
of,
weird because we expected something else.
That's the important thing, is we had expectations. That doesn't necessarily eliminate the truth of the ideas. It's just that we expected it to be different. And I find over and over again that my expectations don't turn out the way I want them to be in life. So there's a possibility that...
Now I get what you're saying.
there's a possibility that Joseph Smith made up the Book of Mormon. I personally don't know how. I mean, I still think it's a pretty miraculous kind of thing, however it happened, whether he channeled this and this was in his psyche. I don't know. I've let go of the need to be sure and say, oh, I know beyond a shadow of doubt with all the fiber of my being, you know, that's okay. But so there's an expectation, you know, in a story that it was one way, and that one way that we expected was not true. So in that way, it's not true.
Okay, that's reason number one.
Yeah. Some people don't like church. I mean, it can be boring.
Right.
There's people there that say things that are irritating sometimes.
Okay.
There are people there that say outrageous things sometimes.
Right.
So, you know, some people just don't like that. And, you know, to some extent, that's just how you are. There's not necessarily anything wrong with that, but, you know, maybe that's not a good fit for you.
Okay.
That's a personal decision to make, and I understand that.
Okay, not enjoying church, number two.
Not enjoying church.
Okay.
Trying to think of what else.
History.
Why people... History. Well, I mean, that kind of falls into the whole truth thing, I suppose, in a way, but, I mean, that... We've built up a history that really doesn't, you know, there's like the correlated history and then there's the messy history.
Right.
You know, and those there's some pretty wide gulfs there sometimes.
Right.
And I think that once again, that comes back to this kind of ethical dilemma of, are you going to be a part of this big lie, which is a negative way of viewing it. I understand that,
right.
You know,
sure.
People have a sense of integrity. And actually, you know, the people that end up coming to this kind of crisis of faith, like you've mentioned other times, it's not because you don't care. It's because you care so much about the truth. You have that passion to be authentic and find the truth and find the real meaning that leads a lot of people to this crisis of faith.
Yep.
Gosh, I'm trying to think of some other reasons, but
so
I mean, a lot
couple,
of it's like
a couple others. I'll set you up. How about the prayed? How about the Moroni's promise and the disappointment?
Oh yeah, that's a tough issue to deal with.
Describe it.
The Moroni's promise. You know, if you shall read these things and pray, the truth of it will be known to you. Or the passage from James that, you know, if you ask God with a sincere heart, he'll make all things known unto you. And you know what? People try that, and sometimes it really just doesn't work. People, you know, I know people, I've heard their stories of, you know, they've tried so hard in church, they did everything right, and they fasted, and they prayed, and they were super righteous, and wanted to have that experience, and it never came. And that's real. That happens to people. What do you do?
And another derivative of that is when somebody has an unexpected equivalent to a spiritual experience in a setting that is non-religious. So for me, it was feeling what I thought was the Holy Ghost,
mm-hmm.
while watching the Muppet movie. and wondering, wait a minute, that was the Holy Ghost, and it's the Muppet movie. And of course you can say, well, God can speak to you through the Muppet movie. But
right.
If you're a thinking person, your next question is then, well, then how do I know that what I felt when I was at church was necessarily leading me to conclude that the church was true, but just that the church, like the Muppet movie, was a vehicle for inspiration, and what are the other vehicles for inspiration? And all of a sudden, you don't necessarily have to discount that experience as being just emotion, although that's mm-hmm. what some people do. But what other people do is say, wait a minute, now I don't know what those feelings mean anymore. I used to think those feelings meant the church was true, but now maybe they mean something else, maybe even more expansive.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's a huge devastation when people come kind of to that realization that, you know, like you said, that they have this feeling and that informs them of some kind of factual truth. Like, I feel good when I pray about the Book of Mormon. Therefore, the Book of Mormon is a historical record of a people who left Jerusalem in 600 BC, blah, 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 all that stuff.
Right.
A lot of people that haven't gone through the crisis of faith, that works for them. But once you kind of work into this thing where you're starting to, you got to really find out for yourself. Honestly, that's not really a very appropriate way of coming to epistemological truth, you know, like the factual truth of whether the Book of Mormon is a historical record through an emotional experience is probably honestly not that applicable. But on the other hand, that same experience perhaps does point us to something of emotional truth. You know, when you see something beautiful and you're inspired, maybe that is, you know, a truth in the sense of beauty. You can have that same experience about the Book of Mormon. I personally think that there's some beautiful ideas in the Book of Mormon. So if I pray about the Book of Mormon to know if it's true and I feel a good feeling, maybe that can also still be indicate that there's beautiful truths in that.
Absolutely.
Does that make any sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, I hate to like almost like jump in and try and solve all these problems. You know,
you don't have to. I just wanted
it's just too expansive of a thing, but that, yes, that totally happens to people. And that is a big problem, and that totally sets people up for a crisis of faith. Because once you're, you know, all this, all along, you've thought you've determined truth through this feeling that you've had, and now you know that the Muppet movie is not true because it's Jim Henson and a bunch of puppets. So that must mean now that the Book of Mormon has no truth in it. And that is a logical and rational conclusion to make.
Right. And the last one I'll just throw out there is kind of the socio-political thing, like being a Democrat in the church or being for social justice in the church, or, you know, the Prop 8 kind of thing. I've seen that lead a lot of people out.
Yeah. The good thing about
feminists, being a feminist.
Yeah. The great thing about
intellectual
or all those things. The great thing about being in the Mormon church is that it's a highly organized community.
Right.
And in a lot of ways, very unified. And the bad thing about being in the LDS Church is it's a highly organized community that's very focused and unified.
Yeah.
So, wow, you know, what do you do when all of a sudden the vast majority of people around you are running off in one direction, and this is now the one true way, you know, to fight Prop 8 in California? And you know, you have a loved one who struggles with, you know, their identity and fitting into, you know, being loved and accepted, that you know, and that's very real to you, and your church is, you know, seen as fighting against that.
Right.
That's tough. I mean, that's gonna throw you for a loop and make you really question whether you want to be a part of that community.
Yep. And tied to that is a final thing that I just thought of that's really important. Some people experience abuse within the church or are of a minority population like homosexual or, you know, a single mom. And so either they just don't fit in socially, culturally, or, you know, they're abused by their bishop or by their scout leader or their priesthood bearing husband. And all of a sudden, the church gets associated with trauma and pain or violence even. And for those type of people, going to church literally means reliving and invoking horrendously terrible pain or agony.
Yeah. My heart just goes out to people that have had to go through that. And I mean, what can you say? Maybe if the pain and that trauma is like that, and going to church is you know, causes you to relive it, that's a compelling reason to distance yourself. You know, I mean, I can't blame someone for really exploring needing to distance themselves and leave. That's tough.
Okay.
And that does happen.
Right. Oh yeah, it does for sure. And those are the people who get most mad at me when I've ever talked about stale DS, because for them, like, staying is just beyond them. It's not healthy. It's unhealthy to stay for them, which is hard for a traditional Mormon to even conceive of. You just can't even conceptualize that the church could actually be damaging for somebody.
Because the person that it's hard to conceptualize is somebody that it's really working for, and they think, well, what do you mean? I'm having a wonderful experience. How can you say that I'm evil? But I mean, I totally get it.
Well, of course, the purpose of this wasn't to belabor that, but I guess I somehow feel that that's an important component to the next discussion, which is the most important part, at least one of the two most important parts of this whole podcast. And that's what I'm not, you've already told us why you stay, and I'm sure that there's going to be some overlap. But for the people who do choose to stay, what are some of the main reasons that after a crisis of faith, after the disillusionment or disappointment, even after deciding that it's not true in this binary literalistic sense, what are the reasons, what are the credible, compelling reasons? Because I have close friends to me who say, look, if you don't believe it, if you can't sign up to everything that is said by the brethren, if you can't say that Nephi actually existed, that Joseph Smith literally saw God and the Father, just as, the sixth version of his story, testifies, if you can't agree with Prop 8 and be a good Republican, or whatever people's, perception of what it means to be an authentic Orthodox Mormon, if you can't sign up for that, get out. Don't pollute it. Don't just treat it like a social club. This is not a game. Get out. And don't let the door hit you on the way out. And I'm asking you, like, what is it? What are the main things that lead people to decide that they can't just run away, that they don't want to run away?
Wow, great question. Why would people decide they don't want to leave? Well, certainly a key one is that all of their family, their spouse, their children, their parents, their brothers and sisters are members of the church. And on some level, it's a cultural sort of thing. And it would just, tear things up socially if they left. Now, there's another site that deals with staying because you kind of have to stay in order to keep the peace. Stay LDS has kind of a different focus on it. It's not, we don't want people, we're not trying to encourage people to stay as sort of a lie to themselves, just to keep the peace. It's really about figuring out a way to enjoy staying and using it as continuing to use Mormonism as a spiritual tool in your journey. That doesn't mean it's the only one. You can pull in stuff from any other tradition. You can do whatever else you want, but is it possible to still keep using the things that you find beautiful in Mormonism? So there's one reason to stay is you kind of need to, but instead of just doing it because you have to, maybe to try and find a way that you can actually use. The Mormon Church is just a church. It's a religion. And it should be used by everybody, even the traditional people, as a tool for personal transformation. So can you find maybe alternative ways that didn't match your expectations before, but new ways in order to make that whole paradigm, that whole, you live, I'm just going to pick an example, but you live in the Salt Lake Valley and everyone you know and everything you do is related to the church. There's certainly a practical element to finding a way to stay and enjoy staying, not just in spite of it.
But for my traditionally believing listeners out there, to hear the church described as a tool is going to be highly offensive and just not resonant with them. So how do just it seems immoral and wrong. The church is either, like Gordon B. Hinckley said, it's either exactly what it claims to be and the one and only true church with exclusive authority, or it's the biggest fraud that mankind has ever made. And how do you navigate that?
I think he was wrong. I know that's. I don't know if there's no way. And this is an important thing: is the target audience for Stay LDS is not people who are happy with the church. So I have no way of
You mean
explaining.
Orthodox traditional believers?
Oh, yeah, that's a better way of saying it. Orthodox traditional believers, they will come to Stay LDS and they will be offended.
Right.
I'm sorry, but we're not talking to you guys. You already have a whole church and a whole church leadership, in Salt Lake City and general conference twice a year and all that stuff.
It's for you. The
It's for you.
ensign, yeah.
Yeah.
Not that those things aren't for us too.
No, it's not. I'm not saying that any of that stuff is necessarily bad or useless.
I think they're awesome, but that's another story.
I love some of the talks, and guess what? Some of the talks I don't like. And sometimes, like that thing that, President Hinckley said, I'm sorry, but I think he was wrong. But he wasn't talking to me as the audience. I mean, I really wish he hadn't said something like that. But I'm okay with that. It's all right if he's wrong sometimes for me, because if I treated everything in my life like it had to be 100% good without a flaw, or I throw it in the garbage and light it on fire, I would have nothing in my life. I would not be married. I would not have kids. I would not go to work in the morning. I would not get out of bed, because life is such a mess that if I only belonged to perfect organizations and associated with perfect people, I would live in a cave.
Right. Okay, so practical reasons to stay for the church is one thing.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. Sometimes it's just more practical. And if you have to do it, you might as well find a way of enjoying it and continuing on your spiritual journey. That's where Stay LDS addresses.
Okay. Other reasons?
Other reasons to stay. You've had a positive experience. I mean, my story. I had a positive experience in the church. I just like it. I think there is a lot of truth in the church, even if it's behind the symbols. And like I said, I'm saying that more from a Joseph Campbell kind of mythological perspective. But when I studied all kinds of stuff outside the church, when I, as the church says, sought out the best books, there's all kinds of thinkers throughout history that I feel so connected with. And when I see somebody like Joseph Smith going and gathering all these things from all these different sources and bringing them together, I find it inspiring. But I also I don't have to eat every single dish. So there's another reason to stay is that you just find it inspiring. And even if a lot of stuff is frustrating, how do you work through that? How do you become comfortable with, like you said, the people that are saying, you know what, you have to do this or you have to do that? And my response is, I can do whatever I want. I mean, listening to those people is as bad as listening to the people at church saying that, I have to do this and I have to do that or, whatever. I don't know. I mean, nobody's come to kick me out yet. So, I love the church. I like being there. I like the people. And like was I did that one example in history where somebody was brought up for excommunication because of their beliefs, and Joseph Smith said, "You know what? I don't fault a man for his beliefs as long as he's, putting a shoulder to the wheel and helping to make the world a better place. I'm kind of putting my own spin on this. He's all right with me. Don't excommunicate him."
Right.
So hopefully there's a place for the oddballs like me in the pews next to everybody else.
You can even make a scriptural case that the Doctrine and Covenants talks about different gifts, and some are given to know and some are given to not know. I use that not for me, but for
Yeah.
believers to say the scriptures allow for non-believers. The other example that I give that came out in Jackie's podcast was this notion of, I think it was Omni in the Book of Mormon, who actually was a evil, not evil, but like
Yeah.
a non-righteous, non-believing almost person who is able to not only, pass on the plates, but even write in them and have his name attached to them. And so there's clearly a place for the unorthodox in the church.
Yeah, within our official canon, there is room for diversity. Because a few vocal people tell me that it's not, well, I don't care. I've been in this church my whole life. I served a mission for the church. I've been putting in my time. This is my church too.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe they need to get out.
Right. Okay. Other
But yeah,
reasons.
I mean, other reasons to stay. Well, I mean, that kind of covers the big ones, is that people have had a positive experience. They've had spiritual experiences that they feel, in order to be authentic, they have to incorporate those spiritual experiences. Like, yeah, all those kind of stories you hear from people that have had stuff like that.
There's kind of the tribe argument, which I think is related to what you said, but just this notion of how we experience, even
Yeah.
conditioned to experience spirituality, like our spiritual language.
Yeah, a lot of people, when they start this process of a crisis of faith, and honestly, I would really wholeheartedly recommend this to anybody, is go out and look around and see what else is there. But what, people will go visit other churches. They will explore other avenues of religious thought. And what, a lot of people come to realize is there's the same problems on the other side of the fence. They're, well, the same kinds of problems. They're different problems. And they also find that they feel at home when they come back. They're like, ah, I come back to the LDS church and give that a try and go, you know what? This is comfortable. This is what I grew up with. I know the language. I know the quirks. Some people argue, they say, well, if religion is messed up, at least I know what's wrong with mine, sort of thing. And you can deal with it. I think, I believe that a fundamental part of our humanity, of being, of experiencing a human life, there is certainly an intellectual portion, but there is an emotional, and I'll use the word from sacred geometry, as an irrational portion of us. And we think in our modern scientific world that irrational equals bad, but what an irrational number is really a number we can't comprehend because there's so many digits to it that, and it never repeats. So there's an irrational emotional component to being a human being. And if we don't explore that, we're not fully living our life. So the way that is explored, the way you tap into, this great ideal of who we could be is, in my mind, through spirituality and through religion. So it's so important to have something to be on the quest, instead of just and even if this, I respect the decision, but even if it is just to walk away and say there's nothing, but I don't know, to deny this part of ourselves is to deny part of the human experience, in my mind.
Right, so it's not just a social club for you. There's a spiritual component to your staying.
Yes, I understand on an intellectual level that what I am looking at is a bunch of metaphors and symbols. There's some historical truth. There's some stuff that's just stories. But what it is talking about, the thing on the other side of the symbol, I still find inspiring. Things like that I'm a divine being on an eternal journey. That's a wonderful way to experience life. That I can interact with the divine, that I have a noble purpose. All these things in Mormonism I found that have gathered together, and to me it is true, even though like I said, I made a really bold statement before saying the church is not true. The church is true, and the church is not true, and the church is meaningless
Right.
all at the same time.
And just exhilaratingly beautiful and
Yeah. I love it. I love being there. Half the people I'm sitting next to would totally not understand, and if I'm not careful and I blurt something out in elders' quorum, everybody looks over and they're like, yeah. But it's beautiful for me to watch these people doing, they're doing the best with what they have. And I don't mean that like, oh, I'm so much better, because I'm probably a bigger screw up than all of them together. But it's beautiful for me to see people trying. and doing this stuff, whether, you know, whether I know people fail, and that's okay, you know, but people are trying. I learn, actually, I have found, you know, that I am expanded when challenged. A great example was, like, last summer I volunteered for a couple days at girls' camp, and I bunked with a brother who was very straight-laced, orthodox, and I know I bugged the crap out of him because we had to stay together. You know, we were talking a lot, and, you know, nighttime rolls around, and we're, like, in this little cabin together. We're sharing, and I'm reading, you know, Rumi, this Persian poet, and I'm reading the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible, and these are all things that are and I'm reading all this stuff, and he's on the other bunk, and he's diligently, like, going through his scripture program, and we went back and forth, and he's like, the only thing you should read is the scriptures, because that's the only thing you could depend on, and everything else will lead you astray, and you should never, you know, you got to attend your meetings, read your scriptures, and I know that I was driving him insane, because I just quite peacefully said, look, I find this is beautiful. It inspires me to think about God and you know, how much I love people around me, and I read the scriptures too, you know. So, but his orthodoxy challenged me to examine, like, well, am I just too far out in left field? Maybe I am a little messed up. Maybe I should, you know, read the scriptures more or something. But see, that I could either get angry at him and say, you idiot, you don't even know what you're talking about. You know what Joseph Smith did back in blah, blah, blah. And ruin his faith. Or I could just appreciatively say, you know what, he was a wonderful brother. He really did, you know, he cares about me. I know he did. And just accept that love from that person, even if you don't agree with them, and even if you think they're messed up. So, anyways, that, yes, the purpose of Stay LDS is not just to treat the church like a social club, because you might get free dinners when you have a baby for a week or, you know, something like that.
Right.
But to really find, if you can, something useful and inspiring there.
You know, I actually am really down on the notion of being a freeloader. I think it's ethically wrong to use the church as a tool just in a total utilitarian standpoint. And I actually see the opportunities to serve my neighbor as a primary reason for why I want to go to church. Do you see it that way? Opportunities for service that you wouldn't otherwise get?
Oh, totally. Totally. And you know, I don't want to be like, kick out all the freeloaders.
Right.
But I don't get as much out of it unless I get as much out of it as I put into it.
Right.
And I don't do everything. Nobody can do everything. But the stuff that I do, I totally agree with you. You know, and actually, if you want to live peacefully within an LDS community and be different, it will help immensely to build up that social capital. Because when I say something wacky in Elders Quorum that's totally off the wall, that guy thinks I'm a nutcase. But guess what? Last month, I was breaking my back moving his sofa out of his, you know, out of his moving truck.
Right.
And he knows I'm a good guy and I care about him. And so maybe it's okay if I'm a little bit of a wacko.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah, the opportunity, the organized opportunity to serve, sure, you could find that elsewhere. But you know what? The LDS Church is really, can be, you know, is a super organized system and a way to find service, to serve other people. And I was really super excited about that announcement of a fourth purpose of the church, which is, you know, intended to bust the people out of just the internal loop. Like, yes, we have opportunities to serve each other, but really only for members of the church. It's, you know,
right.
I see that as a huge, huge potential of getting people out there. And let's not just help brother so-and-so move, let's help this other person that's not, you know, let's really reach out in the community and show how we can improve things and, you know, use this organizational skills and culture, and not in a way that's like, you know, all elitist and all that stuff. I'm just saying, let's really make a difference in the world. The world's a messed up place, but guess what? You know, if we all pitch in, maybe we can make it a little bit better.
Right. What about just the social, you know, one of the things that I feel pretty strongly about as I'm studying mental health is how crucial good social interactions are to mental health, and how you know, this notion that people disparaged Hillary Clinton for, that it takes a village to raise a child. So when people sort of say, oh, you're just using the church as a social club, you know, I feel like that's just really discounting and doing a disservice to the extremely important function that healthy social networks and healthy relationships have to just being a well-functioning human being.
Yeah.
So the church is a social group and is a support for families.
I think the ideals of the church support family values, but I'll have to say, I mean, a person's social experience in the church is going to be as good, honestly, as the people in that local ward.
That's true.
Very true. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of hedge a little on that. I think, you know, like I said, the ideals of the church certainly support, like me associate, like you said, me associating with other men, my peers at church, that's a very positive network for me because it's other men who want to be good fathers and good husbands. Right. And we talk about that in Elders Quorum. And, you know, honestly, in a culture, whatever the culture values, that's what people will like strive to achieve. So if wealth is a status symbol, then people will try to be rich. Or like in traditional Jewish culture, education and, you know, study is highly, highly valued. So the pinnacle is to become a rabbi. And so, you know, here's a culture that says, you know what, to be successful as a man, and hopefully this is the same way for women, although I know there are feminist issues with that, but I'm just talking about my experience. But as a man, I'm associating with other men, and I am, you know, successful if I am trying to be a good person, a good husband, a good father, a good role model, a good teacher, all those things. And so is that what kind of you're talking about?
You know, yeah. And the truth is you're absolutely right. Living, for example, in a upper middle class subdivision in Logan, Utah, or even Seattle, Washington, is totally different than, you know, the Appalachia corridor in, right, you know, Kentucky or Indiana. And so mileage may vary when it comes to the social value and, right, and the value of family support, mm-hmm, aside from the fact that everyone's going to experience a social group differently. So I guess, yeah, it can be a plus and it can be a minus.
Yeah. And actually, you know, this is going to be maybe a poke in the eye of the church, but I've had the best experiences in kind of farther out places. I was in a ward outside of Atlanta recently, and I thought it was one of the most loving and functional wards I've ever been in. But 70% of the families were part member families, and
right,
it, you know, there wasn't so much of the white suit and tie, or no, sorry, white shirt and tie, you know, mentality. It was like real people with real problems in their lives. And those people, you know, like a lot of wards I've been in, somebody moves in and the Elders Quorum president's got to hassle people to show up to the move. This ward, it was like somebody's moving and 15 guys will show up. And it was just, they sent out an email like, so-and-so is moving. If you want to show up, you know, and these people were there for you. Anyways, I've had a great experience, in some of those more remote mission-like areas.
Sure, sure. Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.
Bright with thy praise.